All right, Payne and Pendergast, real quick before we get to the ESPY jokes last night from Shane Gillis. We had somebody ask a question on here that I actually had in the rundown. We just didn't have time to get to it. We were talking about the Shamar Stewart situation where he's still holding out from the Bengals because they're in a standoff over a clause in Shamar Stewart's contract. And neither side is budging right now. There is a chance that Shamar Stewart, he's already said he'll do it. He'll sit out the year and put himself back in the draft next year. We'll see. But I thought about this yesterday, Seth, too. We know that Nick Caserio and a lot of GMs are always looking at little things and ways on the margin that they can get good players, you know, in a way where they're, you know, the less you have to give up, the better a player you can get, the better you can make your team. Text message, could a team like the Texans try and lowball Cincy and trade for him? Offer a second, offer a third, a fourth? And I thought about that yesterday because this we know, Nick Caserio is more inclined to give up a little latitude on contract terms to get a guy in the building, i.e. guaranteed money, you know, more, guaranteed Jaden Higgins his full contract as a second round pick. That had never happened before. I would guess something like what Stewart and the Bengals are haggling over, something that the Bengals are the only team digging in on, that the Texans would happily acquiesce and say, no, your contract's fully guaranteed. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So should a phone call be made right now by Nick Caserio to the Bengals front office to say, hey, you know, we'll take this little problem off your hands. Here's a third round picker. Here they have 2 seconds next year because of the Tunsil trade. We'll give you the worst of our, you know, we'll give you the worst of our 2 second round
picks. I wonder, you know, we don't know that a phone call like that hasn't happened.
Right.
So would I be pleased if I found out that a phone call like that happened? I see. Yes, I would.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
I'd be very, very. And now it's in a position that the Texans aren't necessarily desperate for right now. So how much are you going to trade to give up for him? But it's it seems like that's right up Caserio's alley.
Yeah. Third round pick.
Right up his alley.
Third round pick to get first round value. And it's just the only thing
they
standing
wouldn't a third round pick is two, though. I don't think the Bengals would give him up for a first round for a third rounder.
I think the Bengals are dug. If you're the Bengals, you almost have to be dug in at least through week 10 with this thing. That's the deadline for getting something done.
Yeah, just I think that they might. Luno in that conversation with Chandler Rome and Tyler. I'm sorry, I'm blanking
Stafford.
On his name.
Stafford.
Yeah, Tyler Stafford. Yeah. Sorry, Tyler. Tyler's an awesome dude. He listens to our show. The way Luno talked about it, it's like, you know, he said how things usually start. It's with a casual conversation.
Yeah.
You know, no GM's going to call up with guns ablazing. We're like, I got to have Shamar Stewart. What do you want for him? I'll give you anything.
And definitely not Nick. You
know? So, Nick, I'm like, hey, what's going on with Shamar Stewart? Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Can I think about maybe trading him out? I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, baby.
And I would be happy.
That doesn't
sound
like Nick either.
No. Hey, baby.
Yeah.
It is a fair question. It's a really interesting situation. All right, ESPYs last night. Shane Gillis, comedian, was the host, did the monologue. And I felt good about this, Seth, because a few of the people he was joking about definitely caught some in his monologue. Here was... you got the Belichick joke in, man. Here was Shane Gillis on Bill Belichick and his very, very, very young girlfriend.
Pitcher, hitter, and bookie. A bookie is what Bill Belichick reads to his girlfriend before bedtime. They do. They read the very horny caterpillar. The little engine that could but needed a pill first. And of course, the classic Goodnight Boobs. That was my favorite one. I'm not trashing Bill Belichick. First off, he's 73 years old and he's dating a hot 24-year-old and people are criticizing him? What happened to this country? We used to be a great country. He won 6 Super Bowls. Yeah, he's dating a hot 24-year-old. Maybe if you guys won 6 Super Bowls, you wouldn't be sitting next to a fat, ugly dog wife. They let me do it. I don't. This is Disney. They allowed that. I'm going to tell you a story. I was at a. we should have taken that out. I had doubts going into that. That didn't work all week.
Dude, half the jokes, The funniest part to me is the jokes were good. Him reacting to him like, like half of them, he was doing that after the joke. Like, I didn't even really write that one. That was somebody else who wrote that.
Yeah. That's kind of it. I could see if people don't know Shane Gillis that... He almost comes off like he lacks confidence on stage, but that's part of his charm.
Yes.
So that's I could see where people see that version of him and don't necessarily like it if you don't know him, or maybe you don't like him because of that. Fat ugly dog.
Yeah,
wife.
Dude, that one was just that goes.
That's a tough one to. That's a tough one to not accidentally, subconsciously. Look at the person that it might apply to when you're delivering that joke. You almost got to look at the ceiling when you say that, because it's one thing to make fun of the athletes or the people themselves. It's another sing out an individual fat ugly wife.
Fat ugly dog wife. Oh my god. The big question, has the shark jumped here on making Deshaun Watson jokes? Apparently not. Shane Gillis made one last night.
I didn't write this. Put your hands where my eyes can see is what they say when Deshaun Watson gets a massage. I disagree as well. I swear to God, I didn't want to tell it.
That part, it's kind of a hokey joke. It's like an easy layup. As a comedian, you probably feel like, all right, like, okay, come on. Like, you could have read that joke on the internet.
The guys that aren't comedians that do this stuff obviously have joke writers for them.
Yeah.
Do you think Shane Gillis,
he obviously does. Yeah, he said he didn't write that joke. Yeah.
Do you think, that's what I'm saying, like, do you think maybe he's lying, like the joke didn't hit, and he was like, well, I didn't even write that one.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I don't know. It's funny. They have a committee there, like, he wouldn't have written everything.
You're a little like me right now. You were easily sold to.
I'm being naive.
I'm just posing the question.
I know that's like, because it roasts, it's like that, too. And a lot of times, like, they'll get together before a roast, and they'll kind of be trading jokes or whatever, but this is more structured, where at a roast, the comedian gets the... A lot of times they have jokes they want to tell that are getting shut down and they can't tell it, but they're not gonna read a joke that they don't like.
Yeah.
But they might, like, one comedian will say, like, hey, I got this joke, but I don't really, it doesn't work for me, but I think it works for you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but this for a scripted event where they've got 1 week to prepare for it. I don't know. Yeah, maybe I'm being naive.
Yeah.
But I don't think, again, the whole brand these days, especially, and it springs out of the podcasting world, is like a real transparency about stuff.
Yep.
And kind of like breaking through the fourth wall all the time. I think that I believe Shane Gillis when he says he didn't write that joke.
Yeah. He might have had
20 jokes that he really liked, but 10 of them got shot down by Disney.
I could see that.
So because of that, you got to pick up like, okay, well, I can tell these, but I don't feel great about it.
That one wasn't great, and it was only like 15 seconds. I would have just, if I were him, I just played it because it was Deshaun. It's relevant to our audience that they're still making Deshaun Watson jokes. I would have just gone 15 seconds shorter and not told it. It didn't land.
I would tell Shane Gillis, too, now that you've got mainstream success, you got to realize the hacky stuff kills. The hacky stuff is your comedian bros are gonna make fun of you for telling that joke, but if you had really leaned into it, the hacky people love hacks.
Yeah,
man. There's a lot of you're on network television, kind of. Just go ahead and lean into it, man.
Go for it.
Go full Jay Leno.
This was a funny
you
one.
Wanna be, go ahead.
As he's going around, I was a little upset they didn't pan over to this particular athlete, who I'm not even sure was there, but this was him on Carl Anthony Towns.
The New York Knicks had a great season. Hell yeah. Carl Anthony Towns is here. Hey, girl.
Now, that one didn't land with you, it looked like.
I didn't get that joke.
Carl Anthony Towns has a reputation. They call him Zesty. Because he's got very effeminate kind of body language and motions and things.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
That.
No, I know that. Yeah. That's pretty good then.
He's like waving at the camera. He's doing.
What did Carl Anthony Towns?
They
do?
Didn't pan to him. I was disappointed. I don't know.
Really?
Maybe he wasn't there. I don't know. Or maybe he was super pissed. Who knows? Or maybe he was getting super zesty and they just couldn't find
him. I'm surprised they allowed that. I'm surprised the network allowed that one because there's going to be people that might perceive that as politically incorrect.
Correct. Yeah. Here's one. This is a Shane Gillis Heisman joke.
Travis Hunter won the Heisman Trophy this year. He's the first defensive player since Charles Woodson to win the Heisman. Congratulations, Travis Hunter, winning the Heisman. That's something they can never take away from you unless you kill your wife and a waiter. In which case, they can take that away from you. Well, see, a lot of you don't like me, and that's okay. That's it for me. That went about as exactly how we all thought it was going to go. I don't know why this happened. So
I think he even said, if I remember correctly, Seth, I think he even said going into that joke, it was his tribute to Norm MacDonald, if I'm not mistaken. I thought he's,
oh, yeah.
I remember correctly. It was Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, you told the Norm MacDonald joke yesterday.
Yeah, I think that exact same joke got told back.
They took the Heisman away from OJ? That's they can't take away the Hall of Fame. They didn't take him out of the NFL Hall of Fame.
No,
right?
No.
But they took the Heisman away?
I don't know. I can't remember. I know they took Reggie Bush's Heisman away for taking money in college, and then they eventually gave it back to him. I don't recall. Text in. Did they take OJ's Heisman away? I don't think they should have.
I agree with you. Yeah,
I
mean, it's something that was long before he was found.
It's a trophy for being a good football. It didn't make him a bad football player. Yeah, no, you get to keep the trophy. Sorry, Heisman Trust. You know,
Nope, his Heisman Trophy was not taken away. He was forced to sell it to pay the civil suit. So they didn't take it away, but the man took it away.
The trust, yeah, whoever the trustee was.
The New York Athletic Club didn't take it away,
no.
But the man took it away.
The man did, yeah.
The basically you had to sell it to pay the civil settlement. I hope I never have to sell my Heisman.
I think you're fine.
What's the thing that you would hate? Let's say you had to declare bankruptcy or something. Like, what's the thing that you would really, really hate to part with?
My wife bought me an autographed Lou Holtz helmet that's underneath a really nice case. Like, it's not just an autographed Lou Holtz helmet. It's like it presents really nice. It's something you'd put on a shelf in a living room or something like that. That would be it for sure because, A, it's got sentimental value because of who signed it, and it's, you know, my alma mater. And B, my wife got it for me, so
sentimental value.
Yeah. I suppose
my wedding ring would be the one thing that I'd feel bad about, you know, unless it was, like Brandy left me for her jujitsu instructor or something. Then of course I'd sell it. But as of right now,
would it be? You're still married or whatever. But
that's the only like material possession I have that I don't really. It's not like I try to. It's not like I'm like some elevated Zen master or something. I just don't like stuff all that much.
Can I propose one of yours that you might? That pewter helmet that you have for the Ed Block Award.
Oh, yeah. I really love that.
You love that.
Yeah,
that's why I'm bringing it up. You would?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, so if you kill two people and you're found liable in court, I might be able to get that pewter helmet on the cheat sheet.
If you want to frame me for something, okay, you want that badass pewter.
You know who else likes it? Me.
Yeah. That's probably the thing I would be most upset about parting with.
Yeah.
No, I'm always at any given moment, I'm at risk of just getting rid of everything anyway. I have to talk myself out of just getting rid of
everything.
You're
not a very material person.
I don't like, and it's not because I'm, it's not for any other reason other than that I have a hard time keeping track of things. It's like the more things I have, the more stuff I have to keep track of. And I don't like it.
I can see.
I 100%. I know for a fact if I didn't have a family, I'd be really, really cool living in a shack in the woods. I'd be fine with it.
Absolutely fine with it. Yeah, yeah. The old saying, like, one less thing for you would be like 1,000 less things.
Yes,
this is so nice.
Yes.
This is so nice. Yeah,
I had 1 year in college, I didn't have a television, and it was by far, I think, the most productive year of my life any time before or since. And I still, like, I need to have a television for my job and also because my family enjoys television and everything.
Yeah.
But I just want to smack. I want to pull AJ Hinch on all my televisions once a week. I just want to get rid of it.
Man. I've never felt that way about television one time in my whole life.
Yeah. I know.
Ever. Ever.
I'm pretty good. I remember I sold my Game Boy when I was in high school because I just realized I was spending too much time on it.
Yeah.
So I sold it to Brad Aikens.
Did you get good money for it, or was it one of those things?
Pretty
did
good
he
money.
Get
I don't know. How, I don't know where Brad got the money for it, yeah. But yeah, it was like I didn't sell it for that much. I think it was like 75% of retail.
I've never been a huge video game guy. Just, yeah. I mean, like as a kid when Atari came out, and you go to your friend's house, and that's what you do at a sleepover is play video games all night. But I'm talking about like back then, like. It's strange now because back, I think when you and I were kids, it was really only kids that played video games. Mm-hmm. And now it's, there's 70-year-olds that play video
right.
games
it's
all
golf.
The time.
I think video games have kind of turned into this, the millennials and Gen Z's version of golf.
Yeah.
It's an acceptable thing to spend a few hours on.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
But don't go overboard with it.
That's right.
Especially if you're the CEO of a company. Yes. CEOs can still get away with going off to play 4 hours of golf a day, but they can't get away with playing 4 hours of video.
4 hours
a day,
of Grand Theft
which
Auto, yeah.
I feel that's unfair. Yeah. I feel that's unfair.
Yeah, they're being
and I'm not a video game guy either. I don't. I'm not one bit a video game guy, but I don't. I see how golf has its attributes and video games have different attributes and everything, but I feel like whenever you're doing something recreational for 4 hours in a chunk, it's the same damn thing.
Well, nowadays they're equally social, you know? You socialize on the golf course and you socialize with the headset on playing video games with people, you know?
Yeah, you could forge just as much of a bond, maybe more so going to war with somebody on a video game than you do playing with them in a golf tournament.
Or partnering up with them if it's somebody you're trying to sell to or a company you're looking. Look how well we partnered on Call of Duty 7. That could be us in the corporate world. All right, text in 713-572-4610. You want to weigh in on any of this? All right, the second half, figurative second half of the season starts tomorrow for the Astros. How many awards are the Astros in the running for right now? ESPN has a rating system here that factors in wins above replacement and several other things. This could be a fun down the stretch in terms of honors for the Astros. We'll have that for you coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. So the Astros get started back up tomorrow night, Seattle. It's a big series with Seattle, man. Seattle is 5 games back, but they're playing some really good baseball going into the break. The Astros, the exact opposite. They were playing poorly going into the break. So 3-game setup in Seattle this weekend. So we'll keep eyes on that. ESPN. They did this earlier this year, Seth. I'm guessing they're doing this at each quarter poll of the season. Bradford Doolittle is one of their baseball writers. And they are kind of taking inventory of the various awards around Major League Baseball using a scoring system called AXE, A-X-E, where they factor in things like wins above replacement, and from FanGraphs and from Baseball Reference.
Is this sponsored by Axe Body Spray?
That would be awesome. Is that still thing? Is Axe Body Spray?
We're going to be big with the skanks with this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Axe is still. I think they've blossomed out into other things other than just body spray.
Yeah.
I think they have shampoo and stuff now.
Did you see? I don't want to get too far off on a tangent. There's an Alabama football player at SAC Media Days named Caden Proctor. He's an offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. He said yesterday he has 170 bottles of cologne.
Holy crap.
He's a college student with 100. I don't think I could use 100. I know I couldn't use 170 bottles of cologne for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I think also, too, I feel like you need to pick a cologne and stick with it so that people associate you with that scent.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're a cologne guy. I'm not a cologne guy.
I have cologne. I don't wear it all the time, but I do wear it when Amy and I go out. I let her pick because she's the person who my odor matters the most to.
Right.
So I have one of the Gucci's. I think I have Gucci Guilty or something like that. I've got there right next to the. Oh yeah.
Sounds mysterious, Sean.
Dude, the bad boy wears Gucci Guilty, man.
Yeah, women are like, why is he? What's he guilty of?
Right.
Why does that intrigue me so much?
Right.
I want a good man. Right. But deep down inside, I know I don't.
And ironically,
I want Sean Pendergast.
Ironically, I'm wearing this cologne to impress the one person who knows everything I'm guilty of.
Yeah.
There's no mystery for Amy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. This is what we'll say. Sure.
That's what I'm saying, Seth.
That's what we'll claim.
That's what I'm going with. So at any rate, the rating system that ESPN is using, unlike, I feel like last season, there was zero Astro involvement in any of the honors. I mean, they were a very average baseball team, really, for most of the year. Each of the four big awards, there is an Astro, and at least in the top four right now, for each of the big awards. The American League MVP. Right as of right now, according to the AXE scoring system, would be Aaron Judge. No big surprise there. Cal Raleigh, number two. equally unsurprising. Bobby Witt Jr., number three. Okay, good player. Number four, even having missed a couple of weeks, Jeremy Peña, Houston Astros, is number four in this MVP scoring system right now.
The big one, especially when you're comparing guys across different positions, is people love to look at WAR. So whichever version of WAR that of wins above replacement that ESPN uses, Aaron Judge is still healthily in the lead at number one. This is actually MLB.
They use Baseball Reference and FanGraphs in this range.
Oh, they combine it.
They use both of them to come up with their score here. Yeah,
I mean Pena's still tied for sixth in MLB and wins above replacement.
That's impressive.
Having missed all that time,
because that's not a stat where you're just taking a percentage or an average. That's a cumulative stat that piles up the more you play.
Yeah,
and that's impressive that he's still in the top six for WAR. So he's fourth on this right now for MVP. I'll point out, too, in the National League, you know who's fourth? Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker is fourth in the National League right now for this rating. Shohei Ohtani is Shohei Ohtani and Kyle Tucker's teammate, Pete Crow Armstrong, are in a dogfight right now.
The fun thing is, month by month, not that I'm doing this out of pettiness or anything, but it is interesting. Whether you're an Astros fan, a Cubs fan or not, it's interesting to compare now the fates of Cam Smith and Kyle Tucker. And, you know, Kyle Tucker, I mean, he started off this season on an absolute tear. He's still playing very, very well, but he's come down back to more of the normal version of Kyle Tucker, which is a very, very good baseball player.
Yeah, very
but
good.
Cam Smith keeps month by month creeping up to being about, you know, last month and in July, he's a lot closer to Kyle Tucker than obviously he was earlier in the season.
His name will come up later in this segment, I will tell you that, in a very glowing way. American League, okay, does this surprise you? Two Astros in the top five right now for Cy Young. Framber Valdez is ahead of Hunter Brown. Not by much, just by a point. But Framber Valdez is tied with Joe Ryan of the Twins. Tarik Skubal is the leader. Garrett Crochet of the Red Sox is number two. Framber and Joe Ryan of Minnesota tied at three, 1 point ahead of Hunter Brown, who's sitting at five right now.
I'm a little bit surprised just because Hunter Brown in every other list, every other power ranking, all-star voting, everything else, Hunter Brown just gets a lot more attention and love than Framber Valdez.
He didn't make the all-star team,
right,
Framber Valdez.
Right.
It's crazy.
And that part of it, it's just packed with good pitchers in the AL this year. But it's the first time I think maybe I've seen on any list people putting Framber above Hunter this year. Hunter has just gotten more admiration and stuff like this than Framber has.
Well, and I think and this probably, though, if there's recency bias, reflects maybe what the trust level is in each of these guys right now in the eyes of Astro fans. Framber's been better over the recent part here than Hunter Brown has been. Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez both in the top five for American League Cy Young. Did you have something you want to say? You look like you're about
to say
something.
I just didn't see what are they using to create this list?
It's an AXE rating that they use. I'll read exactly what this is.
It's assessments made by the betting markets, the Award Watch, right? Go ahead.
I'll read. AXE is a rating system developed to combine the results from the leading publicly available value metrics to create a consensus evaluation of each player. That includes BWAR, FWAR, win probability added, and championship probability added. The ratings for each system are combined using standard scores and weighted to best fit the current standard. I don't have the formula in front of me, Seth, but those are the metrics.
That's right. I just got confused, though, because they also mentioned the voters in one of the paragraphs in the intro. So I just didn't know where the human element came into
it. I don't know that there is one. At any rate. So American League Rookie of the Year. Cam Smith is a big mover in this thing. He's up to third. He's only 5 points in this rating system. Back of Jacob Wilson is understandably the front runner. Carlos Narvaez of the Red Sox is number two. And then Cam Smith is number three. And they actually write about Cam Smith here. He's the biggest mover of all these guys, Seth, in the last quarter of the season. And that feels like it matches the eye test, right? Like Cam Smith, since the middle of May, has been on a tear. They say this: Smith has mashed his way into prominence, but he's proven to be a well-rounded young hitter despite just 32 games of minor league experience. Alas, his surprising .277 batting average is driven by a very high, a .378 batting average for balls in play, which means he's gotten a little bit of luck along the way. Like, you know, he's those numbers should be a little more even. However, Smith has just 7 homers, and if his game power starts to match his raw power, he can easily replace any loss in batting average with a gain in slugging. So
yeah,
that all matches up.
That's where he parallels Kyle Tucker a little bit, in just that, you know, we saw Kyle early on. Remember Kyle? Now, Kyle Tucker was not nearly as good in his rookie year as Cam Smith has been, but he also, even after he started to get good, the power just didn't show up. He was hitting stuff to the warning track with alarming consistency earlier in his career, and then the power showed up. But just as it is with everything else with Cam Smith, he just seems to be on a warp speed pace.
It's crazy.
On climbing up through this. And it is that article that I think Chandler did about Cam Smith a couple weeks ago was
Ken Rosenthal.
It was on The Athletic, but it was Ken Rosenthal with all these different coaches just kind of gushing about his work ethic. Bagwell talked about it on the broadcast this weekend too, but just how quick he is to learn things, and you teach him something and immediately he's putting it to work in the batting cage and having success with it. And that's a stark difference from the way that, say, AJ Hinch felt about Kyle Tucker early in his career.
Yes.
They were not a fan of the way Kyle Tucker operated, and that he lacked a sense of urgency compared to other Astros. Cam Smith fits in much more in the mold of those golden era Astros than even Kyle Tucker himself.
That would have been a different kind of article back in the day on Kyle Tucker. Manager of the Year, last one. This is ESPN using their rating system that combines a ton of different metrics. AJ Hinch is the front runner, which is, you know, that makes sense. Joe Espada, number two on this list. Joe Espada, number two for Manager of the Year, and I think Joe's done an incredible job this year.
I think for AJ Hinch to win Manager of the Year, obviously there's kind of there's a big redemption story there. Compared to how people felt about him in 2020.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder, especially amongst baseball insiders, that people, you know, compared to fan bases, people in baseball have very much forgotten about 2017. And I think as time goes by, they definitely don't blame AJ Hinch for it. They know that AJ Hinch wasn't driving it and he really wasn't a fan of it, but there's only the dynamics of a baseball manager in baseball. It's a lot different than a football coach in the NFL.
Yeah.
And what have you. So, I think that unless AJ Hinch really falls off, I think he's very ironically the sentimental favorite amongst a lot of the voters that they probably they might know AJ Hinch a little.
Yeah.
And they're just like, yeah, you know what? This guy got a raw deal in a lot of ways. And look, you got to really tip your cap to this, what he's done with the Tigers.
I'm curious if you, and I'm curious if Astro fans feel the same way I do about AJ Hinch. My number one thing going into the postseason, obviously, will be to root for the Astros to win the World Series. Mm-hmm. Short of the Astros winning the World Series, my second thing I would be rooting for would be for AJ Hinch to win the World Series again. I think I think it's already to a degree a redemption story, especially that he's doing it with this team where he is viewed as a huge reason, A, why they even got into the playoffs last year, let alone beat the Astros in the wild card round. And obviously he's being viewed as a huge reason why they've got the best record in the American League right now. I would love to see that story because I like AJ Hinch. And I wish that he had stopped the sign stealing. That's the only thing I would criticize him for, is smashing a TV was not enough. And I think that's why he got punished and he got fired. But people make mistakes. I'm all about second chances. I would love for this story, again, as long as it's, you know, as long as the Astros are eliminated from the conversation.
Yeah.
I would love for AJ Hinch to, I think it'd be an awesome story for him to win a World Series somewhere else.
The big thing about AJ Hinch stopping the sign stealing and the dynamic that's different in baseball than a lot of the other sports, especially football, because I know football, you know, what it's like in a locker room and everything, is that in baseball, the veteran players they drive the show in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
There's an element of teamwork between the manager and the veteran players. And when your veteran players like Carlos Beltran, the guys that you specifically bring in to provide
they
leadership
brought him in,
and create a culture and everything, it sounds like a way more complex dynamic than simply, well, the manager should have put an end to it.
For sure. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, up next, we do this sometimes. When I come across bad takes, it's not a Friday yet. I've got a Take-A-Mania preview. We've got a couple of takes. One from Steve Sarkisian. And also, is this a bad take, or is this just an indicator that maybe the younger crowd isn't nearly as into lists as I am? We'll determine. And
it's a bad take.
We'll preview it coming up next. All right, we do Take a Mania at 9 o'clock every Friday. We take the bad takes from the week, and we have a reigning defending champion, and we put the bad takes from the week up against them. And oftentimes, lately, a lot the title has changed hands many times of late. There's been a lot of bad takes out there, if we're being honest. And I forget who the reigning defending champ is, but at any rate,
it's hard to keep track. Last week was a tough one. There were a lot of candidates. Yeah,
title changed hands twice last week. Oh, I believe the reigning champ is Kevin Keatsman from Kansas City talking about Mahomes being fat.
Oh, that's right.
The reigning
and not
defending.
Working out and
yeah.
all of that.
Yeah, that's the reigning defending champ. So I like playing some of them before Friday just to, you know, because it's fun to listen to idiocy sometimes. This was Steve Sarkisian at SEC Media Days talking about the culture of the University of Texas program in the NIL era.
We only have so much money to go around. And so we've got to do a great job evaluating. We've got to do a great job of rewarding those players that are doing it at a high level within our program so that they don't go anywhere else. But we've also got to continue to develop our players as they grow and make sure that our players aren't doing this for the idea of money. And I think sometimes, quite frankly, I think it hurts us a little bit in recruiting in the fact that when kids come on our campus, one of the first things we do, we don't talk about NIL. We don't talk about NIL or revenue sharing or publicity rights until the very end. And that may hurt us on some kids, but if a kid is coming to Texas for that reason, we don't want them anyway. You know, we want kids that want to be at the University of Texas because of the school, the coaches, the team, the culture, all those things that go into it. And oh, by the way, you can get publicity rights or revenue share, so on and so forth. If you're coming for the other reason, he's probably going to be the guy in 18 months that's back in the portal going somewhere else where they're going to offer him more money.
Okay, I agree with some of what he said. The funniest thing about this cut, Seth, was that somebody put a video together where they played the audio of that. Yeah. Over top of the fairly famous video right after NIL started.
Yeah.
It had Texas walking high school recruits through the parking lot where there were a ton of Lamborghinis parked out there.
Yeah.
You've seen this video, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Well, come on,
and
Sark.
Also, it's one of those things where, you know, a rich man doesn't have to talk about his money because everybody yes. knows it. Guess where Texas ranks on the
first.
Nobody spends more money in NIL than them. Like, of course, it's kind of. It sounds like some guy, a recruit going to visit Texas is like a guy going out to dinner with a high priced escort. Like you know what's gonna happen at the end.
Yes.
Okay. That guy.
We'll get around to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he knows. You don't need to have a discussion about it. Like, the Longhorns spend more than anybody else.
I love that. That's a great observation. We don't talk about it till the very end. Yeah. We know you're going to talk about it.
You spend more than anybody else.
It's not a surprise.
I know. I do. And I know the part you agree with, though, too. I think that Texas can kind of look at that almost as if I were a coach, I'd be looking at that as a screening process almost too. Like, all right, can this kid keep his mouth shut about the money for a day before we actually start talking brass tacks?
I agree. The part where it's like that he doesn't want it to be the only thing, that if that's why you're coming here, I understand all that. Look, I feel the same way about Notre Dame. And you know, I think a lot of the kids that go there are going for the education plus the NIL stuff and the football and all those things. It's just the whole part about, like, we don't even talk about it. You're right. We don't talk about it till the end, making it sound like it's this secondary topic when we've got footage of high school recruits walking past a dozen Lamborghinis into the building. Like, you can do things without saying it, you know? Like,
Right, yeah. And it's an easy position to be in when you're known as the team that spends most liberally.
Yeah.
That list, by the way, for anybody who's interested, this is based on three is kind of like the online expert. Goes Longhorns, then Texas Tech, then Ohio State, then Oregon. Texas A&M and Miami are tied at fifth. Michigan and USC are tied at seventh.
Okay.
Tennessee is ninth, and then Auburn.
Okay. And I think those are all public school. No, Miami's a private school, actually. I was wondering. I know Notre Dame spends a lot. I could see where they're not in the top 10, though. I could definitely see that. Okay, so that was Sark. We may hear that one again.
Like Notre Dame is like Notre Dame saved a little bit by virtue of the fact that they can't recruit the guys that they can't recruit all of the guys that are going to make the most money.
The academics,
right?
Yeah,
of their academic standards,
yeah, the academic. I mean, it's they loosen them obviously compared to the rest of the student body, but it's not to the level of a lot of schools. So that's Sark. You might hear that again tomorrow at about this time. This was Shedeur Sanders on Max Crosby's podcast, and Crosby asks him impromptu, hey, give me your Mount Rushmore of quarterback wide receiver combo. Good question for Shedeur. He just played with the Heisman winner in college. He's on his way to the pros here. He's in the pros. Who is your Mount Rushmore of quarterback wide receiver combos?
Mount Rushmore of quarterback and wide receiver duos all time.
So Tom and Gronk, of course, but he's a tight end.
I like that.
So Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. Chris Olave and Derek Carr.
That's a curveball. I was not expecting that. But I like it.
Whoever going to be the quarterback for DK Metcalf and George Pickens, whoever that is.
I like it. I like it. You know why? Shedeur didn't play the game. Peyton Manning and I share the same rule. You don't answer questions about lists, power rankings, anything else like that.
Here's the best.
What he did is he completely disrespected the question.
I don't know, man.
Greatest of all time, Sean. Whoever the quarterback is for the Steelers this year, if it's Aaron Rodgers, if it's somebody else after Aaron Rodgers gets injured, that's going to be one of the all-time greatest quarterback wide receiver combo.
He answered a Mount Rushmore question with a whoever wins that job.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's not, and yet to me, that is not the most damning thing.
It's not.
This is why the Olave Derek Carr thing is so. Yeah. Then play it one. It's a shortcut. Play it one more time.
Mount Rushmore of quarterback and wide receiver duos all time.
So Tom and Gronk, of course, but he's a tight end.
I like that.
So Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. Chris Olave and Derek Carr.
Stop.
That's a curve.
Stop. That's a curveball, right? He answered it with pace. That it's a note that he has in his that he's already thought about this.
Of course, if Chris Olave and Derek Carr.
He just needed to stammer for 5 or 6 seconds,
honestly,
and I would have given him the benefit of the doubt. He answered it like he walks around telling people this is the Mount Rushmore.
Anything I've ever criticized Shedeur Sanders for, I throw it all out. I love this kid, man. I love this kid. I love this kid. I love this kid. Mount Rushmore questions are the dumbest questions alive. The dumbest sports topic, everything.
Dude.
And he completely peed all over it.
And poor Max Crosby, who... I think if it were one of like Max Crosby's buddies and they were just on a Zoom call together, he would have destroyed him. But Crosby's like, well, that's a curveball.
So... And a potential combo. I know he added, he did the combo of DK Metcalf and George Pickens there at the end, but let's call that one receiver. So there's eight possible names in a Mount Rushmore of QB wide receiver combos. And he got to Chris Olave and Derek Carr before he got to Joe Montana and Jerry Rice.
Dude, we could be
Peyton
here all
Manning
day.
Before Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison.
Dude, they're not even... Chris Olave...
Troy Aikman didn't make the cut, Sean.
Chris Olave and Derek Carr weren't even in the top 16 last season.
And he reeled them right off. I love it.
Put them all time. I do,
what
too.
The best... It only would have been better if he had done something like... if he had gone like immediately after Chris Olave and Derek Carr, where you're like, what the hell are you talking about? If then he went like, then he went to a deep, legitimate cut like Sonny Jurgensen and Charlie Taylor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That would have been amazing. Kenny Stabler and Fred Biletnikoff. Whoa.
That's the dumbest. I love that answer, man. I approve of that answer.
Okay.
Because he took the. God, I hate Mount Rushmore questions.
I'm not a big fan of them either. That was just the way he didn't even hesitate. Went from Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. Like, Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams is debatable, like very debatable.
Okay. That list that he made, which included one non-wide receiver.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that, too. Yeah.
What list, that Mount Rushmore that he created, what would the actual category be?
Oh, if
you take that list, including quarterback to be determined later in Pittsburgh, which that was in itself is whoever wins that. He said whoever wins that job.
Like, yeah.
I mean, like, if it was so, yeah, what is the actual category?
I would say
our texters, our listeners are going to be better at this in the moment than we will.
The other funny thing is that, and I'm going to answer your question, Aaron Rodgers winds up, and I didn't even dawn on me this, he's in there twice.
Right, right. Well, if he wins the job.
If he wins the job. I would say the category might be quarterbacks who were like somewhat polarizing. You know, like Tom Brady, people love him or hate him just based on how much he wins. People love or hate Aaron Rodgers based on, well, a lot of people hate him now. And then Derek Carr, I think there's a lot of people who are either in or out on Derek Carr.
Maybe the all-time greatest of underrated or underappreciated, even though they were viewed as great quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Except for Derek Carr. But those guys like Tom Brady, whomever else, maybe somehow they're still a little bit underappreciated because people don't, they don't look at them as the ideal for whatever reason.
You know what I know? You know what I know right now? I know you hate Mount Rushmores. I know you would really hate this Mount Rushmore that you're creating right now.
Yeah.
The quarterbacks who are somewhat polarizing.
I don't hate Mount Rushmores. Yeah. I hate them as like a debate, like a fiercely debated topic or something. Yeah. I don't enjoy them. I'm okay with a Mount Rushmore list or question or whatever.
Last thing, because we're up against it. New game. This is from the text page. Shadur's Mount Rushmore of things. I want to hear his Mount Rushmore of presidents.
I'll tell you what, Zachary Taylor has never gotten the respect he deserves.
Oh my God. That's Shadur Sanders doing Mount Rushmores of anything. I want that now. And by the way, I know it's not going to win Take a Mania because Seth likes it, but it will get played again tomorrow. It will get played as
No, because it's also a bad take.
It is a bad take. Yep.
But it's a bad take that I love and endorse.
That's true. There are WWE champions that are really bad, but I love them. So that's
It's a horrible, horrible take, and yet I love it.
Awful. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. There was another cut that we played yesterday I wanted to circle back to, as long as we're having some fun here. This Dabo Swinney story that he told about Brian Kelly, some of you may not have heard it yesterday. We're going to replay it. John Harris reminded me of this. I have a Brian Kelly style story from my old radio show that we'll get to. We'll do that coming up next.